You're with Adam Shirley and Dan Borsha on ABC Radio Canberra.
Now, if you're like me, then you probably find batteries a little bit annoying. You never find the right one at the right time. Perhaps your phone goes dead, or maybe when you're looking for some batteries for your remote control, for your telly or your aircon, your heater, they're just never the ones that you need. Well, think about that on an enormous scale. Not just enough to power your house, but a battery that could power tens of thousands of Canberra homes. That's exactly what the ACT government has been considering as part of the moves to become 100% sustainable in terms of power, but also the way that it's stored and that access to it are all questions that have been mulled over. As part of that, the ACT government is going to be introducing a battery to store energy that would be enough for 25,000 homes for about 2 hours of time. Shane Rattenbury is a Greens MLA and the Minister for Sustainability here in the ACT and is here. G'day.
Good morning, Dan.
So how would this work?
Well, the first part of it is we're about to undertake another reverse auction to buy more renewable electricity. The ACT is about to become 100% renewable electricity. That's a project we've been working on for some time. And when our last big wind farm comes on stream in just a couple of weeks, that'll be the last piece of infrastructure we need to achieve that goal. That said, the population's growing. We're seeing more electrification. We're expecting more electric vehicles to come into the market. More people are moving from gas to electricity. And all of those factors mean that we will need more power over the coming decades. So we're starting that process now. It'll take a couple of years to get that in place. As part of that auction, we're going to ask the company that's successful to also provide the battery you've talked about with that deal.
So just to take half a step back, for anyone who's not familiar, what is a reverse auction?
It's a way of procuring electricity, basically. And it essentially goes out and says, we want this much power. Who can give it to us at what price? The way we've run those auctions in the ACT in the past is we've also asked for other things with it. So we've had a lot of industry development here. Companies have pitched things like bringing their headquarters to Canberra. So we've now got 70 staff that work in the ACT full-time on a range of renewable energy industries that we didn't have only 5 or 6 years ago.
And that's from the private sector, those?
Yes, they're all from the private sector. So we've got big wind companies that have their global headquarters here in Canberra. They operate wind farms literally across the planet from Marcus Clarke Street.
There you go. Now, on this reverse auction, so there'll be two components, if I'm reading it correctly. One will be about the additional supply of renewable energy, and then the second component will be this battery storage. Now, how does that, would that work? Let's talk about the mechanics.
How the battery works?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the battery will be built here in the ACT. We need it to be in the territory. The power generation can come from other places. Canberra doesn't have the best wind resources, and it can be more economic to build the power generator somewhere else. But we need the battery here because it will sit in the ACT grid and provide really important backup services. It's not just about giving out power when there's a blackout, but there's what's called a range of ancillary services, things that control frequency and voltage in the grid. These are really important things that stabilise the grid. Having a battery can also mean we don't have to upgrade the poles and wires as much, which is obviously an expensive thing to do. So there's also potentially a saving there of having that in our system.
So will this battery send power directly to ACT homes within the existing network here?
Yes, it would. At times the battery was being drawn down, yes.
Tell us more, Minister Attenbury, about who you're looking for to not only build this infrastructure, but then source this 250 megawatts of power.
This will be an open tender process in a sense. There are a lot of wind and solar developers across Australia. I spoke yesterday afternoon at the CEO forum of the Clean Energy Council. There was literally a couple of dozen companies in the room who will be interested in this sort of thing. It's become very competitive in Australia. With the end of the federal government's renewable energy target, the industry is very worried about the post-2020 period. There's a bit of a cliff there, and so it's a good time for us to be coming to the market, both to support the industry, but we also think we'll get a very competitive bid.
So when will that process run so that this power will start to be generated?
We will launch the auction on the 15th of November. It's a process that goes for a couple of months. We expect to have the contracts finalised in the first half of next year, and then it'll depend a bit on what the company's put forward. I expect a build period of around 2 years. We don't need this power right now. We are planning for the future and making sure that as we have population growth and those other factors I was speaking of, we are looking ahead and making sure we maintain our 100% renewable electricity commitment.
Those who don't work in renewable energy or energy per se will wonder, 250 megawatts, what is that? How did you arrive at that figure?
Look, that figure is based on the modelling and projections we have of future electricity demand in the ACT, how much we'll need to keep Canberra growing. To give it some context, so far we have purchased about 640 megawatts of renewable electricity to meet our target. Plus we have the stuff that comes off people's roofs, some electricity that comes under the National Renewable Energy Target and Green Power Scheme purchases.
Well, speaking of those rooftop solar generators, the smaller community groups that are generating for their own street as well, what sort of interaction is there with batteries, with the government's ongoing renewable energy sourcing and those far smaller, more localised operations?
Look, aside from this large battery, we have a household scale battery program that has been running for a couple of years now. That is designed to provide up to 5,000 household scale batteries across the city. That's also providing a lot of power, and in partnership with Evo Energy and various others in the ACT, we're now running one of the world's largest virtual power plants by combining all of those batteries together and, through computer programming, essentially getting them to operate in concert.
Dan and Adam with you on Breakfast, 16 to 9. Shane Rattenbury, the Energy Minister of the ACT, is who you are hearing from. What will it cost ACT taxpayers?
Well, so far, the renewable electricity scheme has got a maximum cost for householders of $4.90. That we haven't reached that point yet. As more power comes in, that'll be the maximum cost. That's actually less than when we first started this scheme and the predictions back then, because the prices of renewables have been lower and because of our contracts for difference, which is, I can go into that story.
But is that a per week figure?
That's a per week figure, yes. So it's around just under $250 a year per household.
And just to jump back half a step, Adam was just talking about rooftop solar batteries in the homes, and you mentioned about that program. Are you looking to expand that out with perhaps subsidies for further subsidies for rooftop or batteries?
Certainly for batteries. We've still got lots of available batteries in that scheme of 5,000. So if people are interested in getting a battery, they should get in touch with one of the battery suppliers or solar suppliers around town. They can explain the scheme to you, talk about whether it would be suitable at your house, what size solar system would go with it. In terms of rooftop solar systems, we don't generally provide subsidies these days because the cost has come down so much. Mm. It makes sense economically for most households to go out and put one in. We do have some schemes for low-income households in the ACT to make sure there is access for everybody, but you know, the average middle-income household can afford a solar system.
But certainly at this stage, there is so that scheme around batteries, is that a subsidy to sell scheme, or are there?
Yes, it is. It's worth
sort of caveats on that.
It depends a bit on the scale of your household and your system, but it's worth about $4,000 per household to get that battery scheme. You know, the batteries are still expensive. You're looking at $8,000 to $10,000, but the subsidy makes a material difference.
Yeah, so that is a reduction of $4,000 on that.
Yes.
And the best way to find out about that is to go and speak to your provider or one of those.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got a couple of messages coming in on 0467 922 666. Mike from Hawker, can you ask where the battery will be located? And to that extension of that, how big will this battery be?
Physically, I'm not sure how big it will be. In terms of where it's going to be, we have not determined that. That'll be part of the, I guess, negotiation process with the companies that come forward. We're trying to both be clear about what we want, but leave enough space in the bidding process for innovation and for people to put different ideas. For example, it could be one larger location, or it might be two or three spread out locations across the city where obviously then each one would be smaller.
And is this a first step? Because if this battery could sustain 25,000 homes for a couple of hours, is there a view that we should be able to supply the entirety of the ACT with power in the event that there was a power outage?
Certainly, as more and more renewables come into the system, we need to deal with the storage question, obviously. I think that that's not going to be solely through batteries. Things like pumped hydro, so Snowy Hydro is the best known of that, but there's work being done at ANU that's looking at, has identified thousands of sites across Australia where you could have pumped hydro. These are the sort of things we need to build into our grid. We also need to increase the number of transmission lines between the states and territories so that as we have more renewables, some days it will be sunny in Queensland and the wind won't be blowing in South Australia. We need to be able to move the power across the country and have storage. So it's part of a much bigger project to ensure the East Coast grid is reliable and meets our needs into the future.
Scott asked whether we should be producing hydrogen during low draw times and using the fuel cells to produce power in peak times. And Stuart wanted to know if the ACT is considering pumped hydro, hydrogen storage. It sounds like your answer to that is yes.
We are certainly thinking about all of these things. What is not clear yet is that a lot of these things are at the beginning of their large-scale rollout. Hydrogen, for example, we've got a small-scale test facility going at Fyshwick, and the ACT government will take delivery of 20 hydrogen vehicles at the end of this year. So we are, as a small jurisdiction, working at the front end of these things, but on a scale that is, you know, I guess we're still in the learning phase on a lot of them.
And another message that's just come in from John on 0467 922 666. How come our electricity bills keep going up with New South Wales price spikes if we've signed a 20-year contract? And I think that's around the supply question there.
Yes, there's a number of dynamics at play. And I think anyone who says they understand the electricity industry in Australia, there's about four people that do, I think, understand it completely. But the short answer to the question is that we are still shaped by the wholesale prices across the whole national energy market. ACT consumers have been insulated from that to some extent because of our contracts on the renewable electricity, and that is what has reduced the cost of the scheme. I spoke earlier about the contracts for difference, and they are helping to offset the costs. This is all explained on the Environment Planning and Sustainable Development website, so anyone who's really interested in it can jump on there and read some of the technical detail.
So the corporate interest in who wants to apply for this auction will be the key here, and we'll see in coming weeks as to who puts their hand up. Shane Rattenbury, we thank you for your time today.
Thanks very much.
The Minister for Energy and Climate Change, Shane Rattenbury, on ABC Radio Canberra there. Thank you for some of your questions and correspondence on this, because it goes to powering this territory long term. Someone who knows a lot about this sort of policy and the variety of them in Australia is Tony Wood. He is the Energy Program Director from the Grattan Institute and is with us now to react to some of this detail that Minister Rattenbury has given. Mr. Wood, thank you for your time. Does it stack up?
Oh, good morning, Dan. Look, it does. And I think that what Minister Rattenbury's been describing reflects very positively on his government and his predecessor. I think ACT has taken the lead in these areas. And clearly, as you know, from the answers he gave to your questions, Minister Rattenbury is also well and truly across the broader range of issues that are challenging the electricity sector in Australia. Batteries, as he explained, have an important role. We've already seen the somewhat infamous Tesla battery in South Australia, which was the bet that Elon Musk put in place. But it's been very profitable for that company, and because what batteries do is they're able to buy electricity when it's cheap and sell when it's expensive by storing that electricity and then making it available when it's really necessary. But as Minister Rattenbury also said, batteries tend to be things that are available for short periods of time, and they will need to be ultimately balanced by other things. So batteries have a really important role to play, and as we get more and more intermittent renewable energy, that role will increase.
Yeah, when you say an infamous battery that's been in place now for South Australia, has it worked well overall for what it was designed for? And can the ACT learn from some of those, well, misadventures as well as success stories of providing power?
Well, I think one of the stories of the last 10 years is probably learning more from misadventures than positive adventures in some sense. Numbers of things haven't gone as well as they might have done. And that's one of the reasons why we're seeing prices across the East Coast being a little higher than we would have expected. Things like just the sheer need to connect a whole very, very large volumes of wind farms and solar farms to our grid, where the grid was never built for that, is proving to be an enormous challenge. One of the benefits of batteries is that it provides what Minister Rattenbury was describing as voltage and frequency control. And that's the sort of thing that a very large coal-fired power station or gas-fired power station, what's called a big spinning turbine, you can imagine that thing's got an enormous amount of impetus and momentum behind it. And so what it can do is ride through short-term fluctuations in a way that wind farms and solar farms just don't do. And we saw that happen with the blackout in South Australia when some of them turned themselves off. So I think having batteries to balance, that's important. And we're really only learning how to do this as we go. I mean, this is, you know, Australia is at the forefront, and the ACT is certainly there as well in understanding how to do these things. And I think as we learn more about this, integrating batteries into the system will be a steep learning curve. But as it happens, costs come down. And, of course, as Minister Rattenbury said, we're no longer in a position in the ACT where it's necessary to subsidise rooftop solar. And, you know, I think the role of governments now is rather than continue to be involved in the market themselves, it's better for governments now to make sure across, not just the ACT, but with the Commonwealth and the other states, and territories put in place the policies that provide the incentive for the private sector to do all of this in a way that's the most efficient. And, you know, I think courtesy partly of the initiatives of the ACT government, we're heading in that direction.
Is it going to be the best value for taxpayers compared to other alternatives of providing energy for this region?
Look, in terms of the batteries and the solar, I think the answer almost certainly is yes. I mean, my only area where I would be probably not in complete agreement with the way the ACT government is going is that by continuing to directly involve in these reverse auctions, effectively some of the market risk is being taken by the taxpayers or the government on behalf of the taxpayers. And I don't think it's any necessary anymore. I think the real issue here is the government should be able to ensure we've got the right policies and then step out of that and allow the businesses to get on and invest, and they should take the risks. And the government should make sure that we've got the policies to achieve the progressively towards very low, if not zero, emissions over the next little while. And the ACT, I think, has done that leadership. I would just question whether it's necessary for them to continue to be directly involved, because I do think that, you know, overall, if the government can get the market settings right, the policy settings right, then you'll get a better answer. Effect. What I mean by that is a lower cost answer by making sure there's the straight commercial arrangements. But, you know, I think that's where we'd go next. But I don't suggest that I'm not in any way criticising renewable energy or the leadership role that the ACT government's taken to date.
You're hearing from Tony Wood, the Energy Program Director from the Grattan Institute. Tony, this is going to be a 20-megawatt battery. Is that the right size?
That's one of those questions of how big a bathtub do you want, right? I mean, there's two things.
Bigger is better, I suspect many would say.
Well, a little bit. I mean, of course, inevitably, you're getting this cost associated with getting the size right. Remember that this isn't, if you think about, and you described this in your introduction to your interview with Minister Attenbury, I mean, you think about batteries. We all know C cells and D cells and the different size batteries we have for different appliances. Well, these things which we call batteries are not just like one huge C cell battery. They're actually, you know, in most cases, hundreds of thousands of small batteries, very cleverly integrated together in with a beautiful box on the outside. So, you know, you can actually scale them up into bigger units. With batteries and the way they integrate with our grid, there's probably we're getting to better understand the best size. So I would suggest that, you know, there's benefits in putting them in a household situation, but they're probably a bit more expensive to install that way than commercial size batteries, where you get slightly, you know, better economies of scale. But equally, by having them distributed and not having them too big, you also get benefits because you've got more distributed risk, if you like, across the say, for example, the ACT network. And so, right, getting the optimising that scale is something we're still probably learning about. So I think these sort of sizes, 10, 20, up to 200 megawatt batteries, or the 100 megawatt battery that was the one that Tesla installed in South Australia, you know, it depends exactly on the circumstances. But because they're not sort of one big C cell battery, they can be scaled to try and better understand how they integrate with the grid, how they do their job, how they balance intermittency of renewables, and all those sorts of things.
Tony, in the last couple of months, we've been hearing a lot about community-driven solar businesses that are seeing, well, by one text here, returns that are rumoured to be around 8%. I wonder if this is another way of getting not only to a more renewable energy, but having community buy-in as well.
Look, I think it's an excellent idea. I mean, you know, it depends on, you know, again, when we think about the range of circumstances we have across the country and people living in small towns and large cities and communities, they're living in apartments, they may not have a roof, all those sorts of things. There are opportunities for people to move together, whether they do it as a community, whether they do it with a school or whatever it might be. I mean, there's plenty of ways emerging. And not only that, but there are organisations who are helping those different groupings come together with different ideas. And, you know, I think the idea of, if you're taking, interestingly, it's almost going back to the beginnings of the energy industry in the world, when power generators tended to be more at a local level and were owned by local communities and local councils. So in some ways, it's almost back to the future. But I think the whole idea here of communities being able to, where it works for them, to be able to invest in these things makes sense, because you might get, again, a better scale. And you do get that, as you said, and the buy-in. I mean, people feel as though they're actually contributing to something. Now, there's not necessarily the perfect solution, but I don't think there is a perfect solution. So I think trying all these things and seeing what's best, works best, is going to be part of this journey towards an enormous transition in which our energy system's changing in ways that it hasn't done since we basically started. I just noticed the other day that the electricity system in Victoria this year will be 100 years old. Mm. So this has been quite going for a long time. This is probably the biggest change we've seen in that more than 100 years.
Yeah, big changes, I suspect, indeed. Tony Wood, lovely to chat with you. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan.